Don't cry for Martine.
Aprilia?
Welcome back to Motorsport 101. My God. Look, maybe it's here this way. Listeners, I'm going to be real with you. Between you and us, as an audience, imagine how I feel right now. Dre Harrison here, episode 581 of Motorsport 101, coming to you from a bedroom in West London, telling you all that MotoGP having a French home winner at Le Mans for the first time in over 100 years, at Le Mans specifically, and it's not the Frenchman you may have put some money on, is only the second biggest story of the weekend. In a race of the year candidate. Yeah, that happened. Hi, once again, I'm Dre Harrison. Welcome to Motorsport 101. And, MotoGP just had the scoop of the year. Because we're going to rip the Band-Aid off pretty quickly. Jorge Martin wants to leave Aprilia. Oh.
Now, that didn't take long.
Six races. And he's only been there for one of them.
I was going to say, for him,
one?
Three quarters.
Yeah, like...
Three quarters of one.
0.7, roughly? Yeah. Well, I mean, shit. Yeah. Joining me, as ever, is Mr. Cameron Buckley. I know, bear with him. He's not 100% right now. He's been battling the chest infection.
I don't think I've ever been at a lower percentage in my entire life than I am in this micro instance. Because not only am I sick, not only are my Boston Celtics dead in the water, but it's worse than that, because my man Jason Tatum's leg exited stage left.
Oh.
And I haven't felt this way since Derrick Rose blew his knee out 13 years ago.
Oh, as a man who has been there with Kobe's Achilles going, and it isn't the same because, look, Kobe wasn't the Kobe he was when he had his. It was year 16 of his career. I'm sorry, brother. That is, like, that is Jason Tatum entering his prime. He's only 26, you know, top eight player in the NBA, easy.
And... You know, there's some people out there who never get into sports, and they must be so happy.
Right. Like,
I can't, like, look, we're back in the win column in motorcycle racing, and I can't even enjoy it. We are back. They don't call it the Honda Motor Company for nothing. On pace alone.
Can I share with you an analogy real quick, Cameron? As a friend, and I promise you I mean this in a good way. Like, I think I've played it in our Discord server before, the 2019 Cricket World Cup final where England win on a second tiebreaker, the super over that was tied, and England won on boundary count back in a game of cricket. Jimmy Neesham, who was on the crease for New Zealand when they lost the most epic game of cricket ever played. And the first line he told the press was, and I quote, "Don't get into sports. Don't get into sports. Take up baking instead. Die really fat and happy."
Yeah, that is absolutely accurate.
Truer words everyone, are never everyone, spoken.
What's the interview? It's like making an entire like package of Oscar Mayer half cut bacon every morning. Yes, absolutely. That's what everyone should do rather than liking any form of sports because it just hurts you. It brings you up and then it crashes you back down.
Yeah, no kidding. Also joining me, fresh back from Laguna Seca, is Mr. RJ O'Connell. How's it going, sir?
You know, for the people who've never seen Laguna Seca in real life, whose only experience is Gran Turismo 2, I gotta tell you, it's actually a lot grippier at the bottom of the corkscrew than you might realize. And I know that's shocking because anytime you take the course through Gran Turismo 2, you always run the risk of your car spinning as if it's on a sheet of ice covered in butter.
Oh, yeah.
But no.
Well,
no,
you, see, but- you see, I never had that problem because also relevant, I would simply tack all the downforce onto my TSO 20 in 1998 livery and then pray.
Oh, God. goodness. I'm gonna save that for the next pod.
Yeah, that's probably fair. More on that later, but good to see RJ back with us after a fun trip at IMSA for Laguna Seca. Welcome back, big man. We're gonna talk some bikes very, very shortly. Jorge Martin wanted out. Oh, and by the way, we had the French Grand Prix, and by the way, Johann Zarco won a classic.
Sorry, you fucking what?
Right?
We are back. They do not call it the Honda Motor Company for nothing.
So let me get this.
JulianRider.jpg.
So let me get this straight here. Ducati, who were one race away from taking Honda's 22 race all-time win streak, basically had the equivalent of a goal line clearance in soccer, cleared off the line by Johann Zarco.
All I'm going to say is, Unk still got it.
He's going to be spinning a bottle of champagne under his crack for the next week over at Le Mans.
What? The Honda board going, what denomination of notes would Sir like?
Gold, watches, whatever you like, Cameron.
I will leave it under the podium.
The greatest commentary call in MotoGP history. We're going to be talking about all of that shit because we got a lot to get through here. So we're going to start breaking it all down very shortly. But first, places you can find this real quick. We're on YouTube.com/Motorsport101. We're on Facebook.com/Motorsport101. We're on Twitter at Motorsport_101. And if you'd like to follow us on Blue Sky, you personally, you can at Dre Harrison at CBuckley917 and RJ O'Connell at bsky.social. You can check us on our website, motorsport101.com, where you've got all of those details and extra written content as well in our blog section. I've got full reviews up of the last two IndyCar races and this classic MotoGP French Grand Prix race as well. I ditched my normal format for that one because it was quite special. And if you want to get some highlights of the show in video form, you can on our Instagram page, Motorsport101Pod, including some bonus thoughts from yours truly every once in a while whenever I feel like looking ugly on camera. But that's all that. And if you really like us, you can back us financially on Patreon, patreon.com/Motorsport101. $5 gets you early access to all of our podcasts, and you can upgrade to the $10 tier where you can listen to these episodes live as they're being recorded, as Jason and Vic are doing so right now. Hi, guys. Hope you guys are enjoying the show. Thank you very much for listening in and for your continued support. Right, without further ado, let's get into the biggest MotoGP story of 2025. Jorge Martin wants out at Aprilia.
That's right. It's the big one. Bombshell news, and Dre, your colleagues at the big boy job broke this story. Motorsport.com revealed that Jorge Martin wants to activate a clause in his contract to release him from Aprilia a year early at the end of 2025. According to Motorsport.com, he had a clause in his contract that stipulated that if he wasn't in title contention after six races, with Le Mans being the sixth race, he could activate a clause to leave. He traveled to Le Mans in secret and had sit-down meetings with the team, which allegedly got heated once Martin expressed his intentions. Can't imagine why. The reigning and defending MotoGP world champion has said he's prepared to compromise and give another six round when he's healthy. He's aiming for the German Grand Prix in July, but if forced to commit now, he wants to leave. Dre, I'm gonna read it off as it's stated on the page. What the fuck?
Yeah, that's pretty accurate.
Mm-hmm. Honestly, I'll tell you a little story. I leave my house for work at about 7:45 in the morning. It's about an hour to get to my office in central London. As I was getting the final elevator out of the underground station to commence my 3-minute walk into the office, I get a Slack message from Yuri Pugemont, who you probably know at motorsport.com as part of their incredible Spanish MotoGP team. Him, and again, full credit to your man Casanova, who did the real digging on this, was working on this from Friday afternoon. He's the one who broke the story and did the hard yards. So huge props to her man on this one. He's a fantastic journalist and one of the very best in the game. And I'm not just saying that because I work for them. The Spanish MotoGP team over there is incredible. And they've been working on this for the last week. and they knew this was big. And when I got the text with the upcoming written article that was about to come out with this, my jaw hit the ground. I could not believe what I was reading. There was no indication of this. There was no inkling or hint or anything along those lines to suggest that Jorge Martin wanted to leave Aprilia already. Startling news. And I've never had to scramble to find a meeting room, which in an office is hard to do on a Monday morning to record an emergency episode of Tank Slappers. If you want to listen to that on the Motorsport Network, you can, with me, Richard Asher, and Yuri Pudjemont. But holy shit. Dear God. I don't know how I kept it together during that recording, because this is earth-shattering. This is the reigning world champion basically having a vote of no confidence after one weekend.
In a team where he's been there for fundamentally like some of preseason testing and then three quarters of a race. How bad must it be inside the Aprilia garage?
I wish I
like to meet Dre. What do we got? What are we working with? How bad is it?
Here's what I know, and I've done a bit of, I've asked around, I've seen a couple other places talk about this. I can't give you a 100% concrete account of events, but here's what I know. Jorge Martin drove up from Andorra, where he lives. He lives in Andorra, where a lot of the bike racers live for training purposes. He drove up to Le Mans on Thursday. Note, he drove because he's literally still not fit enough to be able to fly. He never went to the track. He visited in secret. He stayed at a nearby hotel, and he had meetings with Aprilia's camp. Now, from what I've been told, and this has been backed up by Martin Pacino, Pacino GP, one of the big Spanish, again, one of the big independent Spanish journalists over there as well on YouTube. Allegedly, Aprilia wanted Martin to commit to next year now. And Martin basically said, but I've only done one weekend for you. How can you expect me to commit to this contract so soon? But Aprilia was like, we need to know if you're going to be here next year or not. And Martin basically tried to compromise by saying, look, we know there's this clause in the contract. Allegedly, the clause was if Martin was not in a certain championship position after six races, which is what Le Mans was, because Le Mans is round six on the MotoGP calendar, if he wasn't in a certain position by then, there was a clause that Jorge Martin's camp put into this contract at the 11th hour. But, like, apparently this was put in hours before we signed the dotted line on it to say, if I'm not in this spot, I can quit at the end of year one.
Good thing to have in place, considering, like, at the time, we all know Jorge Martin's what he wanted before he came to Aprilia. He wanted to be a factory Ducati rider, and he couldn't get that, and that's the reason why he's at Aprilia, in a decidedly much less capable bike and setup.
So, allegedly, Martin was like, look, I know I've got this clause. I don't really want to use it. Could you give me six races after I'm healthy and I'm back on the bike and we can have this conversation again? Aprilia was like, no, we need you to make a decision. And Martin is like, well, if you're going to put a gun to my head about this, I'd rather leave.
Oh, boy.
And apparently it got heated between both camps after that one.
I could imagine that, but what I want to know is, like, if he leaves Aprilia, and we know the door if Ducati is shut, because we know that, like, Marc Marquez and Francesco Bagnaia are their guys for the factory team,
It's beyond that. He left Ducati because they wouldn't give him the factory seat.
Yeah.
If you go by that logic, the man is only going to accept a factory ride from a manufacturer going forward. And he is a world champion. Unfortunately, it is very over this year, but he is the reigning world champion.
So, Dre, where would he go?
Well, there's Look, and I, Richard Asher made this point on Tang Slappers, and I echo his sentiment when he said this on the show. Jorge Martin's not stupid. He's been, as you mentioned, RJ, he's been jilted at the altar before. Remember last year, he had a handshake agreement in place with Ducati to be on their factory seat until Mugello last year, when Marc Marquez, and let's be real, Ducati got greedy. They basically thought, we can bring Martin up, we can give him a factory, we can give Marquez a factory bike via Pramac and make him the new Martin. And Mark basically said, not on your life, sunshine. And said, no, I'm not riding a satellite bike 2 years running. And that's what forced Ducati into breaking a handshake agreement and signing Martin in the first place. My point is, Martin's not stupid. He's been hosed before. He's not falling for that twice. Like, so quite right. So quite frankly, the way we're at right now, Martin needs faith and trust and backing. The last thing that man needs is allegedly having a gun being put to his head. Especially when it's a bike, which, unfortunately, no matter which way you're getting around it, has injured him twice. He injured him in preseason testing and injured him again in Qatar, even if the injury itself was not directly as a result of the Aprilia crash. It was obviously the tragic instance of Fabio Di Giannantonio hitting him. But the bike has launched him a couple of times already in the very limited time he's ran with it. So the way I see it, I think Jorge Martin has a plan. And I think the plan is, hello, Honda. You got one of them seats for me?
Which, imagine that just a few, like maybe a year or two ago when Marc Marquez leaves what was then Repsol Honda, the factory team, the standard by which all the teams had been measured, up until about 2020, right? Mm-hmm. The decline begins and all of a sudden Honda is really, really having to get creative just to find people that will ride their factory bike. And yeah. You mean to tell me that Jorge Martin is intending to break his contract with Aprilia to join them?
Well, in the meantime, while he's been injured, Aprilia has done, all of the preseason promise that they had has gone nowhere. And Honda has kind of vaulted over the entire midfield, going from the bike, which was at times 2 seconds a lap off the pace last year, to like a distant but still second best.
Yeah, I mean,
they're not cheap anymore.
Yeah, like they are. I think it would be fair to say, and correct me if I'm wrong here, Cameron, that right now you look at Aprilia and you go, they started out great with Agura, had a fantastic start, was top five in Thailand, should have been eighth in Argentina if it wasn't for the disqualification that came from the ECU situation. That was no performance gain. It was just
A version on software.
Yeah.
But the build number on the software was wrong.
It was a trackhouse team error. But the point is, since then, they've largely struggled. Agura's not been as great. Bezzecchi's really struggling to get to grips with this Aprilia. And Fernandez, until this weekend, has been terrible.
You know, and the difference is last year when the row happened with Ducati. Look, Ducati's in a position like, people want to go ride their bikes. Marquez refused to take no for an answer because he knew his factory Ducati seat was his ticket back into title contention. Although, ironically, the way this season's played out, he could have stayed on Grazini and been fine.
Probably.
But Aprilia does not have the competitive ability or the clout to be putting a gun to any of their riders' heads.
No, not off the back of what they've been so far this season, and not for the simple fact of your world champion has barely been able to ride your bike. So we have no idea how good Aprilia really is right now. We're not evaluating Aprilia by the metrics of Ayagura, who, for all his talent, is still a rookie, and Marco Bezzecchi, who his form has fluctuated wildly depending on what bike he's on. Like, it's not ideal for anybody, and as quite rightly as Cam says, Honda at this point, a top eight is no longer a surprise for a Honda anymore. You're like, Yoann Mir, yes, he's crashed the bike a few times, but he's crashed from top eight positions for the most part. Zarco is fourth in Grand Prix points right now. Fourth! on a Honda.
Yeah, the Honda has swung back from their disaster of last year a lot quicker, certainly quicker than I would have thought they would have. But they're not great, but they're better than everyone else besides Ducati most weekends now. It's basically them and then a couple of the KTMs in the mix.
Johann Zarco is the best non-Ducati in the championship right now. And in Grand Prix on Sunday, only the big three have outscored him in race trim. And that's the Marquez brothers and Pecco Bagnaia. That's it. He's been excellent. You know what the thing is as well? He was low-key excellent last season when Honda was complete cheeks.
Yeah, he was top Honda in plenty of races. Only top Honda last year usually meant that he was running like 11th to 14th.
Yeah.
Lucky sometimes to worse. Did they score any top 10s on merit last year?
I think they had two.
They had two.
Wasn't many.
Now they can get two or three bikes in the top 10 if everything goes right.
Yeah.
They are at the top echelon of mid. Because everyone else is mid in the face of the Desmos dominance.
And this is the thing. Everybody knows this. Cam more than anybody else. Honda has one thing going for them. Financial clout.
They have infinite resources. They have needed to use the infinite resources afforded to them not only by their position as a company, but also a regulatory advantage in the rules with them being in tier D of concessions. To get to this point,
free engine development, more aero bits, more tire testing. They can run their Grand Prix riders in tests. That's what the concession system is all about. And Honda's utilized that to its fullest. And now it's on the brink of getting out of tier D if this trend continues.
Like, yeah. And if you're Jorge Martin, look, Honda has had bad periods before in Grand Prix racing. They've just never lasted this long.
Mm-hmm.
But they always come back.
You know what Jorge Martin is right now? Jorge Martin is the stock image of the guy walking with his girlfriend, checking out the hottie that's walking behind him, while his current girlfriend, the prettier, is with the shocked face in the background going, oh my God, what are you doing? Meanwhile, Honda, who's just come off a divorce from their 10-year partner, is now had a spruce up, dyed their hair, had a nice mani and pedi. They've had a crying session with the girls, and now they're ready to find love again. That's what this is. I like just that analogy. I don't care what you guys tell me.
Yeah, dog. Like,
you, I'll let you have this.
You imagine, like...
The problem is, for the entire time in that marriage, they were the problem.
Oh, yeah. It was not a happy marriage at times, but they went through it until they could take it no more in 2024.
Japanese manufacturers were little to do anything except go to therapy. Could you imagine, positive thought, Jorge Martin actually pulls this off, gets the Honda deal. Let's say what happens with KTM doesn't trend upward and Pedro Acosta wants to leave. I know that'd be kind of shitty for Yoann Mir and Luca Marini to lose out like that, but I'm not going to lie to you, that would still be a pretty fun Honda lineup of Martin and Acosta.
It's a death lineup. Look, here's the thing. Here's what I know. Number one, Honda are not touching this until they know for 100% certainty that Jorge Martin can legally sign for them. This could get ugly between Martin and Aprilia. This could end up in court. Because...
The good old Alex Palou.
Because both sides are adamant that they can block the other's claws, essentially. Like, Aprilia doesn't think Martin can actually activate that performance clause, but Martin's camp thinks that they can break off this contract after 1 year if he's not happy. This could end up in court. It could get very ugly between them, and from what I've been told, Honda will not engage in any attempt to sign Jorge Martin unless they know for sure, legally, they can do so. They're not going to approach him while he's under this contract. That's what I've been told. Apparently, as well, and this is on Tank Slappers, Aprilia CEO Massimo Rivera has already had meetings with Honda about how to best move this over. I.e., we don't want this smoke.
Oh, lovely.
Yeah.
Honda's got another problem as well, and it's that their satellite rider in Zarco is currently beating the piss out of both of their factory boys.
Going into this weekend and before we knew this news, it was an open secret that Johann Zarco wanted the factory seat. He laid his cards on the table and made it abundantly clear on Media Day on Thursday. I want a factory deal. I want the money that comes with that. I'm 34 years old. I haven't got a lot of time left in my career. I want to get paid, which is more than understandable.
And right now he's riding in a manner where he's going to achieve that on merit.
And the other problem with this is that Luca Marini is one of the few people in MotoGP who's off sequence. His contract expires at the end of the season. They can let Marini walk for nothing. Johan Mir's going to be trickier to shift because he's got a year left and they'd have to buy out Mir's contract to get rid of him. And this is the thing. We've had people associated with this Honda seat for months already. We had Zarco be rumoured for this seat. We had Pedro Acosta last month and rumours of a 3 for 30 million euro deal to potentially bring him in for 3 years. We had Toprak, Raz Gattiolu in World Superbikes we hinted about as a potential, hey, ride our superbikes for a year and we'll guarantee you a MotoGP seat in 2027 when the new regs start. So there's been so many rumours floating around about like Honda all of a sudden is back on the market and feeling frisky, and they've basically got the pick of the market right now.
Yeah, I mean, beyond that, you've got what, 5 or 6 riders trying to go for, at the moment, 3 seats.
Yeah, realistically, it's either Marini seat at Honda, it's maybe Alex Rins seat at Yamaha, and maybe Frankie Morbidelli's seat at Ducati, but I don't think that one's going to be up for grabs because Frankie's riding very well this year.
Yeah, like Rins is probably the other big one because we'll talk about Yamaha in a little bit. Yamaha is starting to have the shoots of recovery as well, but only with one rider at the moment.
All of a sudden, Honda have now got all the clout in... This wasn't supposed to be a silly season. This was supposed to be the down year because everybody's on sequence next year for contract re-signings. But now Jorge Martin has blown that wide open. And to wrap up this incredible opening segment, what does this say about both their camps? Like, I don't think anyone is coming off this situation well.
No, because, I mean, at the end of the day, Jorge Martin has been out due to injury this entire season. Both preseason and then what happened in Qatar. Aprilia were supposed to be, every year now, Aprilia is supposed to take that next step and start punching it out with Ducati. And instead, they've collapsed down into the midfield. And they're giving their rider, they're giving their, the guy who came to them going, I want to lead your team because I want to lead a factory. You're giving him an ultimatum? No one looks good coming out of this.
Aprilia does not look good by feeling like it has to handcuff its star rider after 6 races in a season where he has only taken part in 1 Grand Prix weekend all year. And quite frankly, Jorge Martin bailing on this project after 1 Grand Prix weekend he's taken part in is not a good look. I don't care what you tell me. That is not professional. Don't get me wrong. You got to do what you got to do. I know, look, they put that performance clause in that contract for good reason. But what that says to me about scrambling at the last minute to put that performance clause in the contract, you know what that says to me, Cam? It says
that's about no confidence.
Thank you. That's exactly what I was going to say. It says to me, you don't have full faith in this project. You wanted a get out of jail free card. And that's not a good look.
But it's no, not when you just left the most dominant manufacturer in modern motorcycle racing history because you felt shortchanged by them because they rightfully so. They backed out on a handshake to hand you a factory bike. But you bet on yourself, and then you said, well, okay, if you won't have me in the factory, I'm going to go lead someone else to the promised land, and I'm going to beat you. By the way, I want to get out of jail free card in case this doesn't work out.
That says to me you probably didn't want to leave Ducati in the first place. Mm.
Well, given...
I don't think he ever did.
Given the fact that we're talking about a team having just lost a 22-race consecutive win streak, a manufacturer, I don't think anyone wants to leave Ducati of their own volition right now.
What does it say that Jorge Martin, who at the time was 25 years old, entering his prime as a bike rider and was, not that we knew it at the time, 5 months away from becoming MotoGP world champion, and the moment that he got jilted from the factory seat, he wanted to leave Ducati as a manufacturer entirely. I don't think... What was wrong with being a customer? Was it the money? Was that it? Because
was it the guarantee of the best equipment?
Because here's the thing, right?
The best equipment.
He proved this.
He had it.
He proved us all wrong. He did it. He got to the promised land. He beat the Bozo Gene allegations. He actually, the second half of last season, he was brilliant and consistent and didn't make mistakes. And that's what won him the world championship last year. You did it. You proved us all wrong. You were MotoGP's first independent world champion in nearly 25 years. Why did you want to leave that badly in the first place? He sounds like a jilted lover. He really does. And it's come back to bite him horribly as a result.
And the guy who got that factory seat ahead of him has been, when he can keep the bike upright, boots to asses on everyone.
I mean, we kind of expected it. It's Mark Marquez.
Because you got passed over for Mark Marquez. Sometimes it happens.
There's no shame in that.
Ask Danny Pedrosa. Ask Casey Stoner.
Ask everyone that's ridden a bike in the last 12 years. Like, we are dealing with arguably the greatest bike rider of all time. Like, it's understandable to play second fiddle to that man. And a message to Jorge Martin would be, first of all, get well soon. The second message would be, don't have your cake and eat it too, big man. You had a good thing going on at Pramac. You did it. You made them world champions. Maybe don't walk away from what is the most dominant motorcycle we've ever seen in this sport. Just saying. We'll have to wait and see how this story develops and continues. I got a feeling we're not going to hear the end of this one for quite a while yet. We'll be talking about it constantly through 2025. But if you want even more insight into this one, again, go listen to Tank Slappers on the Motorsport Network if you want. Straight from the horse's mouth of sources with Yuri Pudjemont, who again does incredible work for motorsport.com. Do listen to it if you haven't already. I barely keep control of my shit. It was that crazy. But also,
yes.
We had a French Grand Prix too, by the way.
We had a French Grand Prix. Yes, Johann Zarco triumphed in what was an absolutely chaotic French Grand Prix. I told you my reaction when I learned that this had happened. So here to roughly describe what happened, Dre Harrison.
Okay, I will try and untangle this bag of snakes that's been presented in front of me right now. So, here's what happened. Half an hour before the race, it starts raining lightly. It's very Austin-esque, but in reverse. In Austin, it had been raining, and it had stopped, and was the track dry enough for slicks. This was the opposite. It was initially dry, but it started raining half an hour out. And the question was going to be, do you start this race on slicks, knowing that a slick bike is about 10 seconds a lap quicker than a wet bike, or is the track wet enough to justify the wet tire? Well, they leave for their warm-up lap, and everybody quite quickly figures out, wait, it's far too wet for slicks. So, as a result, when they're lining up for the grid, more than 10 riders go down pit lane to change bikes. Now, remember Austin? The fact that 10...
Oh, yes, we kicked in the Marquez clause right away.
Kinda, sorta. The other part of that was that, remember, if 10 bikes leave the grid, it's an automatic aborted start.
Yeah.
And that's exactly what happened. So the start was aborted. It was red flagged. That start basically didn't happen. Right. 5 minutes later, we get a quick restart procedure to go again. And if those who don't know the quick restart procedure, when the quick restart kicks in, you've got to be on the track within 60 seconds. Pit lane closes in a minute. If you're not on track when the 60 seconds runs out, you start from the back of the grid. So everybody goes out. They're on wet bikes now as they tour around for the formation lap. They go to the grid. You've seen it before on a quick restart. There's one guy on the grid to say, look, is your bike working all right? Cool. Right. Then they'll go for their warm-up lap again. And then we start, right? Wrong. Half the field plow into the pit lane to switch to their dry bikes again because they think the track's now dried out enough or that it's warm enough that they think they can handle it on slicks. Now, this is where RJ kicks in here. What we like to call the Marc Marquez rule has now come into play. Because they left the grid and didn't take their grid positions at the start, everybody in the pits is now on a double long lap penalty because that's the new rule. After the 3 minute warning goes up, everybody is locked in on their tire choice. If you leave the grid for any reason in the final 3 minutes between that and the warm up lap, it's now a double long lap penalty when the race actually starts. You take your place on the grid and then it's a double long lap penalty. Got it? Good. Right.
All right.
Race starts. Everyone that's on wet tires is going off normally. Meanwhile, there's carnage at turn one. Enea Bastianini misses the apex of the Dunlop chicane, takes himself out, wipes out Yoann Mir, who breaks a bone in his hand. Get well soon, big fella. If that man had bad luck, he'd have no luck. And Pecco Bagnaia,
who had a terrible first couple of corners and found himself in the hornet's nest.
Yeah, he was able to get back on his bike and recover, but he could only finish in 16th place. No points for Pecco for the whole weekend as he crashed in the sprint as well, by the way. So as a result of all this...
Wait. There's one more bike involved at turn one.
Johann Zarco cuts a gravel track to avoid the oncoming carnage. Remember that. It becomes very important later. Meanwhile, the rain is back and it's heavier. Now, everybody that started out leading this race on slicks between lap 6 and 8 comes into the... Oh no, Fabio Quartararo's gone down. Oh no! The home hero with the custom livery and leather job for the second straight year at Le Mans has a horrifying rear slide out at the final corner alongside Brad Binder, who did the exact same thing. No grip on the final corner. They both go down. Fabio Quartararo is out for his home Grand Prix. Everybody is taking that as the trigger. We're coming in to swap for wet bikes again. After this
all... At that moment, you probably think a lot of French fans are just thinking, well, damn, there goes our chances of seeing a home winner for the first time in 71 years.
Well, then, after the initial slick tire runners do their double long lap penalties, get them all out of the way and the field shakes out, they all start coming in for wet bikes again because it's too wet for slicks. As a result, the man who shuffles up to the front after it's all said and done is a man who started on the wets, Johann Zarco.
Hit off and through the gravel trap at turn two.
Uh-huh. He now leads the race ahead of Miguel Oliveira and Marc Marquez, who's now third after the bike swap. He's 8 seconds behind Zarco once it all shakes out. That was as close as Marquez got.
I think we could title this What the Fuck Part 2.
Essentially, because Johann Zarco rides a flawless race, pulls away from everybody else. He's a second a lap faster than the entire field by the end of the race. A supreme amount of confidence on the wet tire. He eventually wins by nearly 20 seconds. And for the first time in 71 years, France has a home Grand Prix winner. And his name was Johann Zarco. That's the one. Johann Zarco wins his second Premier Class MotoGP race. barely a year after his first. Marc Marquez finishes second, and Fermín Aldeguer gets his first Grand Prix podium in P3. We had an incredible weekend, third in the sprint and the Grand Prix.
He was rocking in the wet conditions. He was like 2 seconds a lap up on like everyone near the end of the race.
That boy's fearless. Holy.
He doesn't know enough to be afraid.
Right.
His head is still empty. Great. I mentioned this when Johan Zarco got his first win. It's crazy to think that he should have had like a handful of these as a MotoGP rookie.
You never forget his very first start in MotoGP, where he was riding for Tech Free Yamaha. This is back when, Tech Free was a genuine best independent on the grid and could challenge for wins on a good day.
Getting the spare part, the dumpster diver Yamahas.
Yeah.
Whatever Yamaha would throw out the back door.
And Yamaha was mid back then, from a satellite standpoint, but Zarco was leading that first race in Qatar by nearly 3 seconds when he crashed from the lead in a heartbreaker. That was his first start. This was his 150th MotoGP start 7 years later. And amazingly, he's only had one Premier Class win to that point. We mocked him for having, I want to say it was 15, 16 second places or podium finishes before he finally got that win at Phillip Island in 2023. We mentioned it earlier when talking about Honda. When you look at what they've been through and the doldrums they were in last year as a manufacturer, and we're talking ground zero. Marc Marquez has filed the divorce papers. You know, it's an unhappy marriage. Everybody's upset. Everybody's sad and gutted. Like, everything is in the shitter. Marc Marquez is living his best life with his new hot blue and red dress while Honda is saying goodbye to Repsol. They're struggling. They're at the back of the field. It's a horror show. Johan Mir can't finish a Grand Prix to save his life. The man who was spearheading all of that shit was Johann Zarco. Week in, week out, he put in the work. And what's amazing about this as well is this is a man who was once called a diva because he quit KTM when he left Yamaha in the first place. Like half a season at KTM, he bailed on his contract. Funny that, given this episode. Ironic.
Funny how that all worked out in the grand scheme of things, given KTM is in its death throes as an entity.
Oh, brother, I remember Ryan Eric King was going to give him like the Skip Bayless Kawhi Leonard number two treatment for that 4 point forward.
I know King was hurt watching him cross the finish line.
That's right. Number five taking the win in France.
Number five. Yeah, it's exactly what this was. This is a man who was once labeled a diva, who has become the best workhorse in the paddock. The man who never complained, never moaned, took every weekend as he could, took whatever result he could get. Yeah, there was the occasional crash and the occasional mistake. It happens in MotoGP. But he got on with it. He guided Honda the best he could. And he's the man who deserves the reward for Honda being as good as they are right now, where they are genuinely the second best manufacturer on the grid. I'd argue, of all the grinders that are in MotoGP, no one has deserved a win out of nowhere more than Johann Zarco. That man has busted his balls for the last 18 months to get to this position. He's earned it. He was brilliant.
Two of them are under the same roof now. It's him and Aleix Espargaró a couple of years ago.
Hell yeah.
Kept working through the shit and has eventually it's come good. And we talked about it and being able to pull the gap. He had the heat and the confidence on the wet tires. And Mark came out basically, he ends up second, about 8 seconds behind. And Mark said it himself, he did two full push laps, you know, taking risk, saw the gap didn't really come down much, and then decided to take the rest of the day off.
Yeah. He knew what this was. We'll talk about a bit more about Marc Marquez in a minute, but Johann Zarco beat the field's ass once this race settled out. He was a second the lap quicker than almost anybody else on track up until the final stages. It was a flawless ride. It was an ass-whipping. Zarco was on another plane of existence compared to arguably the strongest MotoGP field we've ever seen. Incredible. That was one of the most dominant rides you'll ever see in this sport. And it was done by Johann Zarco, of all people. Incredible.
Yeah. I mean, that video from Ken's Anthology, Unk still got it. It was so perfect with the LCR team. He stops right after he crosses the finish line. And he's dapping up his team at the side of the road because he has that much time over the rest of the field.
He was waving to the crowd during those final two corners. He was barely even turning the thing.
That crowd for a second, because everyone in a 10-mile radius of Le Mans is now deaf with how loud that crowd went.
Drunk, you name it. 120,000 fans at Le Mans on Sunday. A MotoGP single weekend attendance record, 311,000. Le Mans doesn't get those kind of numbers. Like, and look, I applaud the Le Mans team. Like, I know the promoter owns the event. It's not like most MotoGP rounds. They own the event. No one promotes MotoGP in the region better than Le Mans does. They've done an incredible job turning Le Mans into what is now the blue ribbon event on the MotoGP calendar for fan attendance year on year. The France are rabid. Look,
every event at Le Mans should be the blue ribbon event. It's Le Mans, and they have made it so.
Yeah.
94,000 on Thursday and Friday, RJ. 94,000 on Friday.
Are you telling me that this is like if Stone Cold walks out into any arena in the years between 1998 to 2001?
Yeah. The I think there was something like 20,000 plus on Thursday just waiting to get Fabio's autograph. Like,
Yeah, that entire crowd. All right, dump the Fabio gear. Get the Johan gear on now.
Plan B.
It's Fabio Quartararo stepping into the bush and then sneaking out with it in Johan Zarco gear.
That's what this was.
Yeah. Fabio, sadly, now playing he's now playing the part of 2021 to 2023 Mark Marquez. He's putting that Yamaha where it doesn't belong in qualifying. And then crashing in the race because the man, he is having a ride out of his skin to put that bike where it is.
Fastest ever lap of Le Mans on two wheels on qualifying on Saturday morning. 129.2. Again, even more stunning pole lap than his one in Jerez. It was the first time Fabio has had back-to-back pole since 2021, his title-winning year. And he has nothing to show for it except a cuddle with Simon Patterson in the media center after the race was over.
Well, I'm sure they made Van Man very happy. happier than watching a flag to flag.
Oh, he loves them.
By the way, he's never been more wrong ever.
Correct.
No one has ever been more wrong. talk about Mark for a second.
Yeah.
Punched 20 points home on everyone else around him in the championship because no one else around him in the championship finished in the points and or finished.
As you said, Mark ticked two push laps, saw the timing screen, and was like, you know what? I'm good.
Yeah. It came down like a tenth and a half. And it's like, if he has to take that kind of undue risk to push that hard, I mean, in those conditions, everyone was getting caught out. First sector was treacherous at the peak of the rain. Mark Marquez took the points and now once again has a healthy lead in the championship.
22-point gap now.
It's like the events of the last couple of weeks never even happened.
Yeah, he got one back for RF. Alex Marquez was pretty much following Mark home in that race until a whopper of a high side at the Dunlop chicane in turn three. Flips it, but he's got such a huge margin, he's able to rejoin in P6. Despite high siding from P3, gets back on the bike, and then at the end of the race, he has a huge crash at Essa Blue, like just going in way too hot. The bike says absolutely not when it comes to turning right.
Because it dumped him down. I thought it was a mechanical failure. So quick did the bike say absolutely not.
No, thank you. Your game is over. You've had enough today, sunshine. Down he goes. Alex Marquez is out. So he gets 0 points in the race. Martin Marquez has a 22-point lead in the standings now. And Pecco Bagnaia, who has nothing to show for Le Mans weekend, is now 51 points behind.
Look, we can't pin all of this weekend on Pecco because ultimately, like, he ended up in the hornet's nest at turn in the first chicane and got bit by it. But this weekend was an unmitigated disaster for Pecco again.
The Grand Prix, that happens sometimes. He was unfortunate. That wasn't on him. That was Enea Bastianini, who quite frankly is very lucky.
We thought Enea Bastianini was going to get off scot-free for that abomination of a first corner crash.
I'm stunned.
And it turns out, after the race, they investigate and say, you, sir, are getting punished.
I'm stunned it's only a one long lap penalty. It should be two. That was egregious.
He was completely off the track, cuts the corner, and rides into the side of Pecco. Dumps him down. Mir has to take avoiding action, crashes himself, and he hits Zarco off into the gravel.
Yeah, and Mir, as I mentioned, Mir broke a bone in his hand in that crash. Had to be taken to hospital.
His neck, too.
Yeah, that was a rough one. No, I was going to mention a bit more about Bagnaia here as well, and the simple fact that not only was obviously he distraught at the fact he's had a horror weekend, not entirely of his own making. I think the Saturday struggles and what he was saying to the media afterwards was extremely telling. He's basically given up in terms of trying to have the GP25 adapt to him. He basically said, I have to adapt to it.
Well, he made the point, like, and we've seen this from Mark before, that Mark can kind of blunt force through whatever a bike is going to do. And some, like in the Honda days, the bike would blunt force back, and that was the problem. Whereas with the Ducati, as long as Mark doesn't take unnecessary liberties with it, like he did in Jerez in the race, like it was just, again, a dumb mistake in Coda. Look, fact of the matter is, Mark has dumped two weekends away. Those two weekends should have been surefire wins.
Again,
this is the first time on raw speed where Mark hasn't been able to go winner. Like, this is the first time he's finished and not won. Oh, he finished second.
It's no big deal. He's not won a rat race since 2017, Marquez. He doesn't have to win these races. For once, he took the smart call and took the easy points, and he's been richly rewarded for it.
Yeah. And, like, first real blunder for Alex in the title race so far, but a big one where, like, Mark's safety margin is basically restored now. And he's still undefeated in sprint trim.
6 for 6. First rider in MotoGP history to win 6 sprints in a row. Beating Jorge Martin's record.
And it doesn't look like that's going to end anytime soon.
If he is healthy and there is no shenanigans, Martin Marquez is 3 temps quicker than the field. It's that simple. In race trim, he's untouchable.
That is an absurd margin. Mm-hmm. And Pecco kind of spoke to it of, like, Mark can basically ride a tractor to its 100%, and I just can't.
Yeah.
And I need to get better at that. And that is, for someone who is such a confidence rider and has been, that is a shocking admission.
Yeah, there's no getting around it. Bagnaia has been very vocal about struggling with the sprint tank, not having the feeling on the bike that he had last year. I think his crew chief summed it up very well, where he said, Pecco is a very Goldilocks kind of rider in the sense of he's very sensitive when it comes to testing. He's like, if it's a little bit out of joint, he'll tell you about it. It's what makes him so easy to work with, because as a crew chief, it's like, okay, we can pinpoint exactly what the problem is here. But he's
it's the exact opposite of Mark Marquez, who could basically just will paper over the cracks and override the bike through a problem.
Yeah, and he said, I remember watching Ducati's behind the scenes series on YouTube during Austin, and he said, look, put 2 tires on this thing and I will win it. is what he basically told them, because he was so comfortable with that initial setup around Austin when it was in the dry. He was like, just put two tires on it and I'm good. Basically is what he said to them. And until his own mistake, he was proven right.
Yeah. And that wasn't even like an overriding. It wasn't even like an overriding mistake. He just got the corner wrong and clipped the curb.
Mm-hmm.
Like, and the problem is when you're up against someone who can effectively just ride through the problems, whatever they may be. Like, Ducati's got the perfect combo now of the guy who can fix and develop the bike and the guy who can then just go run the thing into the ground and get lap time out of it. The problem is that it's not a particularly competitive teammate package, because at every turn this year, Mark has had an answer for Pecco.
Yeah, Pecco's not been able to touch him anywhere this season so far. And as mentioned, that's not the biggest issue. The biggest issue is Alex Marquez is beating him on last year's bike.
And if anything, I think like Ducati's got to be looking at the GP 24.763. It's as fast as last year's bike. It might be a little bit faster, but it probably isn't as universal a tool as the GP24. We just throw it on the track. Yeah, it's good.
Yeah.
Wherever the GP24 goes, it is comfortable. It is fast. It is effective. The GP25 seems to need a little bit more tweaking to get into the sweet spot. It is last year's aero. It is most of last year's engine, but it is a new swing arm. It is new suspension.
Yeah.
And
they moved the engine around as well, because that's the reason why they can't go back to the 24 setup, because they've moved the engine mount around on this year's bike.
I thought they retained last year's chassis.
No, of course, that's not what David Emmett was saying on his post. He was saying they've moved the mount around, basically. That's why they can't reverse spec. It's a problem.
So the plot reveals itself.
Mm-hmm.
Well, then that is a more significant change.
Yeah.
And ultimately, like, one that they are probably going to have to do some back-to-back work with in the offseason, because the GP24s are hunting them home every race.
It's a bike that single-handedly has turned Alex Marquez from an also-ran midfielder to genuine world championship contender. It's saving Frankie Morbidelli's career, and it's given a rookie podium finishes. This bike is working fucking miracles right now.
I genuinely did think they were going to go perfect this year. And without the rain, they probably do at a canter.
Oh, yeah. But look, you open Fermi now, the gas fuel tank right now, there's enough bread and fish to feed the 5,000.
And of all the bikes that I thought were going to interrupt that streak, it sure shit wasn't the Honda.
Absolutely not.
Miracles may cease. We know the line.
Indeed. What a weekend. What a time to be alive. What a week of bike racing. Captain, it's Wednesday. We'll be back for the British Grand Prix. That's another weird thing to say. The British Grand Prix at the end of May. That's next up at Silverstone. Look, it's going to be a great weekend. The British Grand Prix is always a banger. Should be a good time, especially in all three classes. You don't get a boring British Grand Prix. I think there's still some tickets available as well. Look, if you're British and you want a good weekend of racing, go buy British Grand Prix tickets for MotoGP. You will not be disappointed, I promise you. And
unless they repave the track and it's about to rain,
then you're in trouble. Good luck. But they'll be back for the British Grand Prix at Silverstone in a week or so's time. We'll be back with another M101 this weekend while we talk about IndyCars. We catch up for the last couple of rounds as the sport deals with its own problem. And it's Alex Palou.
Much like this sport, that damn Spaniard.
Until next time, I've been Dre Harrison, they've been Cam Buckley and RJ O'Connell. Thank you very much for listening, and we'll catch you guys next time. Sayonara.
They don't call it the Honda Rain Company for nothing.
It's also now the Grand Prix of the United Kingdom. I'm sorry, everybody.
Whose idea was that anyway?